Genesis 29 and 30. That's a lot of verses tonight. I thought about how to break this down, and again, you could break it down and stretch it out for quite a while. But I thought it'd be fun to see if we could read these and put this in context here tonight. But it's Genesis 29, verses 1 through 35, and then Genesis 30, 1 through 24. And on the top of your notes, what you're going to see take place is you're going to see Jacob is going to arrive in Padan Aram. He's arriving. And then, that's verses 1 through 8, then 9 through 14, he's going to meet Laban's family or his relatives. He's going to be very excited about that. And then that's going to lead to what appears, and now you don't have to accept this, but as Jacob leaves, he complains about Laban having changed his contract with him numerous times. And I think we can see that at the beginning right here. When he meets Laban, he's going to be given his first contract, the first agreement, and that's going to last for a month. And after a month, Laban's going to say to the effect, you know what, you shouldn't have to work for nothing. And I think Jacob's thinking, I didn't think I was working for nothing. And that's going to lead to then the third verse, or third section there, the second contract, which is going to be the bride price. And he's going to begin working for a bride. And that's going to be for 7 years. And of course, historically or classically, as we know, that's also going to get changed. He thinks he's working for Rachel, but then Laban's going to come up and say, well, it's got to be Leah. But so he's going to change it here a second time, and then a third time after 7 years, it's going to get changed. And then beginning in chapter 29, this is kind of why I wanted to just keep going, because 29, 31 through 35 is going to be Leah's children. And then after Leah, Rachel's not having children. So in chapter 30, verses 1 through 8, it's going to be Bilhah's children, Rachel's handmaiden or slave girl. And then Leah's going to stop having children. So she's going to then say, well, I'll throw my slave girl in. So there's this extreme competition. As we look at this, once again, we're looking at a story. We're not necessarily looking for Christian examples. This is, you know, it's like you go back, and I will go back to last week. Jacob, I went back after I thought about what I said last week, that Abraham heard the promise and believed, and it was credited to him as righteousness. Jacob hears the promise from God himself and says, okay, if you'll do this and you do these things, then you will be my God. Meaning he says, okay, but let's see if you come through. He doesn't believe God. He's cheated to get where he's at. And now God comes and says, I'm going to give you the same promise I gave Abraham and Isaac. And he goes, if, and he doesn't just believe. And then he goes through this whole episode. So I went and checked Hebrews 11 because I thought, well, surely there's some place it's, you know, it says Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. It's positive about the patriarchs as a group, but you don't have anything positive. You have a couple places in Hebrews chapter 11 where it mentions Abraham, but when it mentions Jacob, it's at the end of his life on his deathbed in Egypt where he blesses and pronounces a blessing on the 12 tribes. So it's almost as if there's nothing in his life. Again, that's not an absolute, you know, Hebrews chapter 11 is not giving you a play-by-play and every highlight, but it doesn't use anything in Jacob's life from his time in Beersheba to his time up here in Padan Aram to the time he met Esau and wrestled with the angel of the Lord to the time that his sons, you know, slaughtered the people of Shechem. Nothing, even until he gets to Egypt and he's an old man on his deathbed, is where he pronounces the blessing. And so as we go through these, there's going to be a reason that these 12 sons of Jacob, when they go back to the land, they're murderers. The oldest son is going to end up, Reuben is going to end up sleeping with one of Jacob's wives and losing the birthright. And so throughout this whole thing, what's going to be interesting is just watch this develop, because it's setting the stage for a disastrous family, if you would. They're going to sell their 11th brother, the second to the youngest brother, they're going to sell him into slavery to the Ishmaelites, or the Midianites. And it's like, well, what? They must have made a mistake. That was after they killed the men of Shechem. And then Jacob, he says, I'll come back. He tells God, if you do these things, I'll come back here to Bethel and I'll build an altar and I'll give you a tenth of everything. And giving him a tenth of everything would be burning up a tenth of everything. There's no priest to give it to. There's no temple to donate it to. There's no, you know, playground being built by the church or, you know, baptismal slide to donate to. He'll just burn up a tenth of everything. But he doesn't. He doesn't show up. It's several years before he shows up to Shechem. And when he does, he has to tell his sons, put away your foreign gods. We're going to bury him under this tree. And I've got to go to Shechem. I made a promise. And it's like, and that's some 20, that's plus 20 years later, 25, 30 years later that takes place. So there's a lot of crazy things going on in this story. Well, anyway, you've got Leah's children in chapter 29, verse 30. Chapter 30, verse 1 is Bilhah's children. Then Zilpha is Leah's handmaiden that was given to her at her marriage. And then finally in chapter 30, Rachel's going to have her first son. She didn't have two. She's going to have her son, Joseph, and that's how this is all broken up. So with that being said, I will do this real quickly also so you can see this, so we know where we're going. You've got Terah, which is Abraham's father, Abraham, Isaac, and then Jacob. That's a J, that's an I, that's an Abraham. Then you're going to have, you've got Nahor is going to be a brother of Abraham, who's going to have Bethuel, who's going to have Laban and Rebekah, and then Laban's going to have Leah and Rachel. Now there's another son over here named Haran, and he's going to be the father of Lot and the father of Milcah. Haran dies, but Nahor marries Milcah. Is that right, Nahor? No. Bethuel marries Milcah, because Haran, Nahor, and Abram are brothers of Terah. Haran dies, but Nahor's son Bethuel marries Haran's daughter Milcah, and they have two children, Rebekah and Laban. Isaac marries Rebekah. Jacob is going to marry Leah and Rachel. So that's the family line. That's how that whole thing's related. So let's begin reading chapter 29, verse 1 through 8. Then Jacob went on his journey, leaving Bethel after having seen God at the house of God. It's called Luz, but he calls this place now Bethel, the house of God, and came to the land of the people of the east. That is Paddan Aram. It's up there in Haran on the other side of the Euphrates. As he looked, he got there, and as he looked, he saw a well in the field, and behold, three flocks of sheep lying beside it. So you've got three different flocks of sheep laying beside this well. For out of that well, the flocks were watered. The stone on the well's mouth was large. The reason it's large is so that you can't move it until there's a contract. And we'll mention this as we go through. It appears to be a contract or an agreement amongst the shepherds, and there's three flocks already there, that this is protected by this heavy stone, that the only way we can get resources out of this is if everyone's here and we can lift the rock. And so there's three already there. It keeps people out, you know, thieves away. It keeps, you know, passengers or people, travelers or wanderers away. And it keeps the resources equal. It'd also be probably some kind of contract about the fields. It's near the city of Haran, but it's outside the city of Haran. This is not a nomadic group of people just wandering out in, you know, through the Negev or something. They're outside the city of Haran, and there's a well there. And behold, three flocks of sheep lying beside it, for out of that well the flocks were watered. The stone of the well's mouth was large enough that you can't lift it by yourself, supposedly. And when all the flocks were gathered there, the shepherds would roll the stone from the mouth of the well and water the sheep, and put the stone back in its place over the mouth of the well to protect the water from strangers or people that were not part of their community with these flocks. Jacob said to them, so he sees the flocks, they're just sitting there. My brothers, where do you come from? They said, we are from Haran. He said to them, do you know Laban, the son of Nahor? They said, we know him. He said to them, is he well, or is it well with him? They said, it is well. And see, Rachel, his daughter, is coming with the sheep. So here comes the fourth and final flock of sheep, or she's the fourth to gather, and there's a fifth and sixth and seventh flock yet to come. We don't know the details, but she's going to be the fourth flock, and she's the shepherdess bringing her flock, or Laban's flock. He said, behold, it is still high day. It is not time for the livestock to be gathered together. Water the sheep and go pasture them. He goes, why have you gathered here at noon together, or are they all just, you know, coming together, waiting until all the groups get there? He says, you should water them and go back to the pastures. But they said, we cannot until all the flocks are gathered together and the stone is rolled from the mouth of the well. Then we water the sheep. So that's saying we need everybody, you know, it's saying the stone is heavy. One guy can't lift it. It's not saying, well, we got three guys here, but we need Rachel's help. You know, and now that she's here, we can lift the stone. It's an agreement. It's more of a contract. Everyone's got to be here, and then we lift the stone, and we're waiting for everyone else to get here before we water the sheep, and then we go out to the pastures. So maybe they're getting a late start on the day. Something's going on there, but it is a contract. And that's what I've got written down, their legal contract. Chapter 29, verse 9 through 14. While he was still speaking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherdess. Now, as soon as Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's daughter, or his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, Jacob came near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. Okay, do you see what happened right there? It's typical Jacob behavior. We've got a contract. They're all waiting. And again, there's got to be enough men, you know, in those three. If there's just one, two, three men that are shepherds, or two men and another woman, or, you know, whatever, that they should be able to move the stone. But they're waiting until all the flocks are gathered. And then under our contract, under our agreement, we water the flocks, and then we put the stone back, and then we go to our places in the field. Well, Jacob, just himself, lifts, and this is in, you know, all the commentaries, man, Jacob himself lifts the stone up, and everybody else is probably like, what is this? Who is this? But he lifts it up and waters, he bypasses the whole contract, waters Rachel's sheep, and that's what he does right there. Then Jacob kissed Rachel and wept aloud, and that's again his emotion. He lifts the stone, and because he's seeing family member, and again, it's a big deal. He's never met Rachel before, and it's the kiss, Rachel, is a greeting. It's nothing about, you know, she's so cute, you know, I'm going to ask her out. There's nothing like that. She's Laban's daughter, which is his mother's brother's daughter. I mean, it's his cousin. And so he kisses her and wept aloud. So, I mean, and again, weeping, I mean, he's wailing. He's excited, he's thrilled, he's emotional about being there. And Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's kinsman and that he was Rebekah's son, and she ran and told her father. Now, as we do this right here, remember, we've already had this scenario play out where Abram sends his servant up here to find someone from his own family to take back and marry Isaac. But that servant that came up, remember, he brought with him all these treasures, all this good, the necklaces, the jewelry, the whatever he had. It was part of the bride price. He's planning on paying for the bride and taking her back. So remember, Laban was there that day when that happened, when his father, Bethuel, received this and Laban himself received some of it. It's like, oh my gosh. And when Rachel goes and says, a son of your sister Rebekah is here, what has he got to think? He's got to think, what kind of car is he driving? I mean, what kind of stuff did he bring with him this time? I mean, it's not blatant in the story, but he's got to be thinking, there's another advantage here. So again, there's going to be the family tie also. But as you can see, and you know already, we're not talking about two noble people. Jacob and Laban are not, you know, they're not someone you want your child to grow up and be like. I did like the fact that he lifted the stone up by himself. As soon as Laban heard the news about Jacob, his sister's son, he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his house. Jacob told Laban all these things, and Laban said to him, now, this is a technical language right here, and they talked about a lot of things. Doesn't say anything that Jacob said. It just says Jacob told him all these things, tells him all what's going on. But this is quoted here, so it may be important. I think it's the first contract, and commentators have made this suggestion. He says, surely, after all these stories and all the conversation, surely you are my bone and my flesh. That would be a technical term, potentially, of setting Jacob up to be an adopted son. Meaning you're going to be part, and this was common, an adopted son would be brought in, named a son, and he'd be an heir and receive part of the inheritance of the family. And he stayed with him a month. So now Jacob's got in, if we accept, you don't have to accept, he might have just said, hey, you're my relative, hey, I got a place for you to sleep on the couch. You can stay for a few weeks. Or, you are my bone and my flesh, there's your contract. So he stays with him a month. Then Laban, after a month, okay, you got that all written down there. It would appear after serving for a month, then Laban said to Jacob, because you are my kinsman, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Now, it's possible Jacob was just keeping busy while he was there, but it's also possible that he thought he was part of the family, that I'm being adopted, I'm going to be part of this family, something. But all of a sudden he finds out, should you therefore serve me for nothing? It's like, okay, he'd say, well, we need to figure out a pay scale for you. Now is Jacob saying, well, yeah, what are you going to pay me? I've been here for a month, let's negotiate. Or is Jacob thinking, I thought we already negotiated this, and he's going to change the contract? And you can't say, well, Laban would never change the contract. Well, because this very contract he's giving to Jacob, he's going to change it, and Jacob eventually going to say, he's changed it numerous times. He keeps ripping me off. He keeps adjusting things. And it's interesting because that's how Jacob got in this situation, was lying, deceiving, changing things. Okay. Then Laban said to Jacob, because you are my kinsman, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what shall your wages be? Now Laban had two daughters. The name of the older was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Now, Leah, the name means, sounds like the word for cow. Rachel, the word sounds like you. So you, that would be she's with the lamb, cow, Leah. There it is. Then it says, Leah's eyes were weak, and in the English, but Rachel was beautiful in form and appearance. Now, in my English Bible, and how we always teach this, is Leah was, you know, the ugly daughter with, you know, weak eyes, but Rachel was the formerly daughter, beautiful in appearance, so she was the hot daughter. Leah was the ugly daughter. Okay, and that's there it is. Read it that way. But the word weak that's translated here, it can also be, and it is other place in the Bible, translated like a king who is a gentle king. He's gentle with his people, meaning that would be a good character trait. It's the same Hebrew word. He's weak with his people. But that doesn't mean he's weak. It means he's just, he's patient, he's gentle. So the word means gentle, tender, delicate. So it could mean, it could be a compliment on both of them. The formerly beautiful daughter was Rachel, but the one with the delicate eyes, the beautiful eyes, was Leah. And I don't know what, I have nothing more to say. I've taught this before with Leah meaning cow and the eyes, that her name means cow eyes. You know, she just had ugly eyes. Yeah, that's we call her cow. She looks like a cow. And then there's the beautiful daughter, formerly Rachel. You can go with that, or you can mean she's got the beautiful eyes, she's got the beautiful form, he's got two beautiful daughters. Again, be careful how you read the English, because it's translated. Leah's eyes were weak, but Rachel was beautiful. That word but could be and also. Leah's eyes were delicate, and Rachel was beautiful. You know, so it could be positive both ways. Okay, now, Jacob loved Rachel, and that word is broad meaning. I mean, it can be affection. It can mean, you know, he's attracted to her. It can mean she's his, you know, relative. But he loves Rachel. And he says, here's his agreement. I will serve you 7 years for your younger daughter, Rachel. Very clear. I'll take the younger daughter. Now, Laban doesn't say anything. And he's going to later. He's going to say, well, 7 years later, he's like, well, you know, we got a custom. I should have probably said something to you about it 7 years ago. But he doesn't. So there's clearly cheating going on. We know Jacob's known as a cheater. We know Laban's going to cheat. Rachel herself got into this mess of deceiving Isaac. And at the end of the story, you're going to see Rebecca caused this by deceiving Isaac. And at the end of the story, you're going to see Rachel herself lie to her father. So there's everyone's lying to each other. So he says, I'll work for 7 years for your daughter Rachel. Laban says, it is better that I give her to you than I should give her to any other man. Stay with me. So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed to him but a few days because of the love he had for her. So he would see her in the fields, he'd see her around the house, but he was not married to her, and they stayed apart. Then Jacob said to Laban, after 7 years, give me my wife, that I may go into her, for my time is complete. I've served 7 years. So Laban gathered together all the people of the place and made a feast. But in the evening he took his daughter Leah and brought her to Jacob, and he went into her. Laban gave his female servant Zilpah to his daughter Leah to be her servant. Now, several things are taking place here. I want to come back to that verse, but I want to get over here on the notes before we get too far into this. Or let's see, at the bottom of the page. Okay. At the bottom, we're going to come back and keep reading the text, but bottom of page 2, Laban has forgotten or nullified the original agreement, and the contract has been restructured as a bride price agreement. So that first agreement, you're flesh of my flesh. Now it's like, what can you work for? I'll work for a bride price. I'll work 7 years, and to do this, and I've got this in the notes, and I'll try to get through all the information in the notes, but I'll say this right now. Usually the groom and his family would have to have the bride price. They would have to have something to give in exchange for the bride, for the woman. So Jacob and his family, like Abraham, sent money up with the servant to get Rebekah. And that's expected. There's going to be a bride price, and then you get the bride in return. Well, Jacob shows up with nothing. Jacob has no flocks. He shows up with nothing. He stayed there for a month. And he's got nothing. So Laban's like, Scott is out. I mean, I'm not getting any jewelry. I'm not getting, like, what we got for Rebecca. I'm not getting anything for Rachel. So he says, how about we do this? How about you work for me for 7 years and I'll give you a daughter? Okay, so he's got to work for 7 years to get the bride, and that is going to be the bride price. So that he's stuck. He's stuck with that. So that's the second agreement, the 7 years. Next, point two, that says the very same thing I just said, point two. Point three, since Jacob has nothing and his family is not available, Jacob's second contract for the bride is 7 years. The bride price at this time, according to Newzi contracts, N-U-Z-I, Newzi, that's that area of up by Euphrates, it'd be Iraq, it'd be in that area. And there's three tablets right there that are the Newzi, there's thousands of them, I'll say hundreds of them that they discovered. Several things in the Bible, like the Hittites and the Horites that were mentioned in the Bible, and they never exist anywhere else. When they found these, those same people are mentioned on these tablets. Just a picture of three of them. On these contracts, you would get a bride. The bride price was 30 to 40 shekels is what you'd pay. That's what's going at this time. Jacob's work of 7 years, you'd get paid, even in the law of Moses, you'd get paid a shekel a day. That's about a shekel a day. So at the, a shekel a month, sorry. And so at the end of a year, you'd have 12 shekels. At the end of 7 years, you would have 84 shekels. So right here, he's going to be working for twice the value. And those are contracts. Those are negotiations. Those are life forms from that time of what they're going for. Deuteronomy 22:29 says in the law of Moses that if there is a virgin woman and a man rapes her, that he then has to pay the price of 50 shekels. This is in Deuteronomy 22, 50 shekels to the father, and she becomes his wife. So there's a woman that's a virgin, a man rapes her, she's now your wife, and you've got to pay the bride price of 50 shekels. So those Nuzi tablets say 30 to 40 shekels for a bride price. Jacob has agreed, if he gets paid a shekel a month, to 84 shekels for Rebekah. The law of Moses, 1400 BC, says 50. So that's just interesting. Now, if you look at those, I was looking this up, and I found this information interesting. I found an article. I've got the article there in the middle of page 3. There's a link to it. These are some things that are found on the Nuzi tablets. First, they explain the custom of a servant becoming an heir. So if you don't have a son, your servant would become your heir, just like Eliezer was going to be Abraham's heir. A slave girl is given as a wedding gift to a new bride. That's not speculation. That's when they translate those cuneiforms, that was what they did. A slave girl, when a woman was married, the father would give her a slave girl to go with her and take care of her. An upper class wife who was childless, say like Sarah, had to provide her husband with a slave girl to bear him a child. Thus, Hagar being given by Sarah to Abram was exactly what was going on in these Nuzi tablets. This is not Bible information. This is what the culture was doing, where Abram had come from. A father could name any one of his sons as his heir, not necessarily the firstborn. So we think of firstborn, but in these, if father had the right, you choose which son is going to be your heir. This is interesting. It's going to come up later in our story because Rachel is going to steal them from Laban. The household gods are called teraphim. It's in our story coming up. They were images of dead relatives. And the possession of these little gods, little images of people, which represented your dead relatives where the estate had been handed down, these were them. Whoever possessed them implied that they had the family inheritance. They owned the property of the family estate. So when Rachel leaves, she's taken them. She decides, I got ripped off. I'm just going to take the title deed to my father's possessions. And Jacob doesn't know it. And Laban comes down to fight Jacob for him. And Jacob says, search all my stuff. We didn't have them. And Rebekah is sitting on them and she won't get up. We'll talk about that story. And Jacob even puts a curse on the person that takes them. And it's Rachel that took them. She steals them. And why did she steal them? Because that's the title deed. And that's on those Nuzi tablets. If a wife possessed the teraphim, she could give her husband the ownership of her family's property. So if a wife would have the teraphim and she married another man, she could give him the teraphim, the gods, or the images of the relatives, the dead relatives, and now that estate has been transferred to a new household. And that's what Rachel apparently was planning on doing for Jacob. And again, the bride price on those was 30 to 40 shekels for a bride. So with that information, you can kind of see that. Now this marriage, point six, the marriage was a joyful business transaction. Now again, we got to separate from our Western culture. Our marriages are about two people fall in love, two families get together. They celebrate. There's going to be, if you're Christian, you're going to be in a chapel. There's going to be a religious clergy member there. I've done many weddings. I've done funerals too. I remember, I was excited. I was pastoring a small church because I got to teach the Bible a couple times a week. And then all of a sudden someone calls me and says, Merle died. Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. The funeral's going to be Thursday. It's like, oh, I got to do a funeral. Now, I didn't go to seminary. I didn't go to religious training. I just wanted to teach the Bible. And but you get to teach the Bible if you pastor a church. So I'm going to pastor a church. And then Merle up and dies. It's kind of like, oh, boy, I was a scared 33-year-old. I was terrified. It's like, all these people are going to come. Now, it's one thing to have people come in and have me teach Bible. Because if I mess up, I can correct it next week. You know, plus I'm studying. But if you mess up Merle's funeral, I mean, he was 80 some years old, died of a massive heart attack, and you get one and done. I mean, and I got up there, and I was so. I remember he had the suit on, the tie, and I'm just sweating. I'm just talking. I'm like trying to do the, you know, read the things, and I do my little message, and I get done. I walk out in front of the casket, you know, we go down and everybody follows out, and I'm standing out by the casket and shaking people's hands, and I real quick just look at my watch. It started at 10 o'clock, and I was standing by the funeral shaking hands, and people were leaving. It's 10:15. I mean, we did the whole thing. We sang the songs. We did the memorial. We read the back of the bulletin. I gave my message, and it's 15 minutes. I think, the guy lives 80 years, and I bury him in 15 minutes. I thought, oh, and I'm just like, just devastated. And then his brothers come by and go, that was good. I want you mine just like that. Because it was fast, he got in and out quick. And then it eventually became a joke. We're going to, when they, his other brothers, Larry and another, I can't remember. Larry and Gary were his brothers. And I'd always joke, I says, when you guys die, we're just going to have a drive-by. Just drive by. I'll just, you know, waving at them as they go by. And so anyway, it all worked out well. But, okay, my whole point, sorry. In our culture, you have a wedding. It's two people fall in love. You're going to have a clergy there. You're going to be in a chapel. These were marriages were business transactions. Point six, they were not religious. They were not civil. They were not, had no priest. They had no sanctuary. Personal love was not first. Jacob is attracted to Rachel, but that's not the first motive. So Mary was a legal, economic, social issue that could result from an agreement that was made years ago. So you can be growing up and meet your wife because somebody decided this 15 years ago, this is who your wife was going to be. It's a business transaction. So this whole thing is business transactions. Now, this is interesting. Hammurabi's law. Now, I've got a picture of Hammurabi's code right there. You can see that. And there's a close-up, so you can see that's in cuneiform writing. And there's a list of codes. He lived 1792 to 1750 was when he was ruling. So if you look right here, this is where we're at, right? Jacob is at Laban's, 1929. This is where he's at. Right about here, right about this time period right here is Hammurabi's living. Do I have a picture of that right here? He's living during the time of Joseph. Okay, that's when Hammurabi, and he makes a law. And law number 160 on the Hammurabi's code it identifies the penalty for not delivering the bride for whom the bride price had been paid. Now, of all the rules and laws you're going to come up with, one of them was, here's the penalty if a man has received the bride price but fails to give the bride away. Then there's a penalty he's got to pay. Well, that's exactly what is going to happen here. The bride is Rachel. The bride price was 84 shekels, or 7 years of work for Laban, and he doesn't give the bride. And that was, again, apparently a common thing because there's a law about it. Weddings, point 10, weddings were 1 week long, celebrations. And the bride was presented to the husband after the first night. So it's a celebration, it's a business transaction. And then after, you know, the eating, the drinking, the festivities of the first night, in the darkness, you know, the bride is brought, given to the husband at the first night. Now, this is interesting, point 11. And I've wondered about this for years. Contrary to Laban's claim, There is no custom on any of these newsy tablets, and there's a lot, on Hammurabi's code, and there's 160 plus laws. There is no custom, there's no record, there's no, and that doesn't mean it's not there. We don't know everything of the ancient world, but we know a lot, especially from these newsy tablets. We even know the price of the bride price. But there is no custom recorded anywhere that the older sister has to be married before the younger sister can be married. In fact, we know from the Newsy tablets that the firstborn son may not be the heir. The father can choose anybody he wants to. So you may be the firstborn son, but we're choosing somebody else. So it would make sense that the younger daughter could marry someone before the older daughter. And especially since Laban agrees to the 7 years for Rachel, and then after 7 years says, oh, we have a custom. I can say, looking at what we know, no, you don't. And I can say, Laban, you didn't know about this custom 7 years ago because you agreed with Rebecca or Rachel. Okay, so we go back to our notes. Not notes, but the text, page 2, verse 21. Then Jacob said to Laban, give me my wife that I may go into her, for my time is completed. So Laban gathered together all the people of the place and made a feast, it'd be a week-long feast. But in the evening, that'd be the first night, he took his daughter Leah and brought her to Jacob, and he went into her. Laban gave his female servant Zilpah, just like the Newsy covenant said, to his daughter Leah to be her servant. And in the morning, behold, it was Leah. And Jacob said to Laban, what is this you have done to me? Meaning he knows he's been deceived. Did I not serve you for Rachel? That was the agreement. Why then have you, look at this, deceived me? And that's the same word that is used when Isaac complains that Jacob had deceived him. And so many of the things that takes place in Jacob up here are almost like the fruit of what he's been doing, especially when you get into the younger and the older. See, Jacob is the younger, he gets the blessing. Well, now he gets the older daughter instead of the younger daughter, just very similar to what's going on. Laban says, it is not so done in our country to give the younger daughter before the firstborn. Complete the week of this one, so complete this wedding week, and we will give you the other also in return for serving me another 7 years. Now, Jacob could have negotiated, Jacob could have said something, but he's really got nothing. He wants Rachel. What's he going to do? Laban has all the cards. So Jacob did so and completed her week. Then Laban gave him his daughter Rachel to be his wife at the end of the week. So now he's got two wives. Laban gave his female servant Bilhah to his daughter Rachel to be her servant. So there's your four women, Leah and Zilpah and Rachel and Bilhah. And he served Laban another 7 years. And that's all the information. I think I've read through all that stuff. So we can turn to page 4 already. When the Lord saw that Leah was hated, so that kind of gives you the attitude, he doesn't want Leah around. So he's got a love relationship with Rachel, but apparently Leah is hated. He opened her womb. Now, this is Yahweh and what Yahweh is doing. Yahweh is showing favor to Leah because she's not getting any favor from the world. But Rachel was barren. And I think, you know, of all this, you can be critical of Laban. I can be critical of Jacob. I can be critical of Rebekah and Rachel. But right here, this is saying in the text, that's in the inspired scripture, that the Lord saw that Leah was hated and the Lord opened her womb. So she's going to get pregnant. But Rachel was barren. And Leah conceived and bore a son, and she called his name Reuben. For she said, because the Lord has looked upon my affliction, for now my husband will love me. She thinks, now that I've got a son, my husband's going to love me. And if you look down there, 1, 2, 3, 4, under that section right there, Reuben means see a son. So she's excited, I've now produced a son. Now again, in this world that they live in, a wife is not complete until she produces a child, and particularly a son. In fact, in this culture, if a wife is proven to be barren and doesn't have children, she can be returned to the father as, you know, like a bad car can be taken back to the dealership. It doesn't run right. And so a wife is not secure in her business. Remember, but then doesn't he love her? This is not about love. This is about the business transaction. And the reason for marriage is to produce children, heirs. See, isn't it amazing? Our Western culture is just upside down. And we're going to reap the harvest. I guarantee we're going to reap the harvest of being upside down with reality. We could go on, right? Hope for America's Last Generation, part two. But in this culture, it was a business transaction, and the idea was to produce children. But this business transaction, if the wife doesn't produce children, she can be returned as a faulty product. And the business transaction didn't go through. I paid a bride price. I got the woman, but the woman doesn't produce. And so Leah is excited because, hey, I'm secure. Now, Rachel, she hasn't secured her marriage yet. She hasn't produced a child. So Rachel's going to get a little edgy. And she's going to blame Jacob. And Jacob's going to say, I'm not God. And she says, the Lord has looked upon my affliction. So Leah feels that she is afflicted. She recognizes that she's the second choice. For now my husband will love me now that I produce a child. She conceived again and bore a son and said, because the Lord has heard that I am hated, he has given me this son also. And she called his name Simeon. And Simeon sounds like heard. The Lord has heard her. Again, she conceived and bore a son and says, now this time my husband will be attached to me because I have borne him three sons. So the score is 3-0. And the wife that is not the first choice is got a 3-point lead. And he'll be attached to me. And so the word Levi sounds like the word attached. Therefore, his name will be called Levi, verse 35. And she conceived again and bore a son and says, this time I will praise the Lord. Therefore, she called his name Judah. And I suppose this time I will praise the Lord. Instead of looking for hope in Jacob, one try with Reuben, Simeon, two tries, Levi. Now he'll be attached to me. It's like, okay, I'm giving up on Jacob. Jacob's not going to come around. I'm going to praise Yahweh. I've got four sons from Yahweh. I'm not sure what's up with Jacob. I can't make Jacob happy. So again, you can see the focus, the 1, 2, 3 are about Jacob, Jacob, Jacob. I want to be a legitimate wife. It doesn't pay. It doesn't work. Culture's not producing for her. And now she says, I'll just trust Yahweh. That's almost like if you want to talk about a conversion, that's maybe where she came face to face with the fact that I'm going to recognize God. Okay. Chapter 30, verse 1 through 8. When Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, she envied her sister. She said to Jacob, give me children. Just what he says to Laban, give me my wife. She says, give me children or I shall die. Jacob's anger was kindled against Rachel, and he says, am I in the place of God who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb? Boy, that's not a, I mean, there's some things there that I would not say to Tony. I wouldn't even think them. And if I did think them, I wouldn't utter them. Just because it's disrespectful. It's rude. It destroys a relationship. And you just see this relationship. Again, look, four sons. So if you think she had a son every year, Leah, we're in the fifth year of marriage. So if this is 7 years, the first 7 years, he works for Rachel, and now he's going to have seven more years. If Leah produces a child every year, this is the 11th year, and he's been with Rachel and Leah, you know, for 4 or 5 years now. And she's mad at Jacob, and Jacob's now saying, God's keeping you from having children. Then she says, okay, here's my servant Bilhah. Now again, for my marriage relationship, that would never be the answer to the problem. Here, sleep with this woman. In Western culture, that's not normal. But as we can see on those newsy tablets, that's exactly what they would do. That's the slave woman would go and produce a child because it's about a business transaction. We need the children. We need to secure this marriage. Go to her so that she may give birth on my behalf, and even that even I may have children through her. So she gave him her servant Bilhah as a wife, and Jacob went to her, and Bilhah conceived and bore Jacob a son. So we see the problem's not Jacob, as we know. Then Rachel says, God has judged me and has also heard my voice and given me a son. So Rachel's trying to get credit for it, which is, again, according to the law, that's her right. Therefore, she called his name Dan, which sounds like judged. God has judged the situation and given me a son, Dan, through my slave girl's relationships with my husband. Rachel's servant Bilhah conceived again and bore Jacob a second son. Then Rachel says, with mighty wrestling, I have wrestled with my sister and have prevailed. So the score is now, according to her, is 4-2, and she's winning. But, you know, in reality, it's 4-0 with her slave girls got two. So she called him Naphtali, which sounds like wrestling. Now, can you see this tent? Now, these boys are growing up in this setting, okay? These boys are growing up not with a happy mom and dad. They're growing up with a dad who's mad at Rachel, who's mad at dad, but dad's got two other wives, and now the competition's going to set in amongst the sons. It could almost be that they get to the place where they can sell one of the sons into slavery and not even think twice. We think, how could you sell your brother into slavery? It's obviously that's one of the options. Chapter 30, verse 9 through 13. When Leah saw that she had ceased bearing children, she took her servant Zilpah and gave her to Jacob as a wife. So now he's got a fourth wife. Then Leah's servant Zilpah bore Jacob a son, and Leah said, good fortune has come. So she called him Gad, which sounds like good fortune, or boy, am I lucky. A good Christian name. Good fortune has come. Leah's servant Zilpah bore Jacob a second son, and Leah says, happy am I, for women have called me happy. So she called his name Asher, which sounds like happy. Now, so you don't get confused, I did make a chart, and go to the very back page, page 6, on the back, and there you can see I've got that little chart I made, Jacob's wives and children. And I put the wives in this order, Leah and Rachel. That's the order that he married them, Leah and then Rachel. Then because Rachel doesn't have children, she gives her servant Bilhah, so that'd be his third wife. And then since Leah stopped having children, she gives him another wife, Zilpah. So you see the competition. There's two wives against two wives, but yet do you think Rachel and Bilhah are getting along? I mean, Bilhah's having children, Rachel's not, so you've got two wives against two wives, but now you've got Rachel against Bilhah, who's probably against Zilpah. It's just, I can't see happiness being in that household, but I don't know. But now the sons, Leah, you can see 1, 2, 3, 4, Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah. And then you've got to jump over to Bilhah, Rachel's slave girl, Dan and Naphtali. And then Leah throws in Zilpah, and that's Gad and Asher. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And then we're going to find out Leah's going to do some transaction. We'll read about that here in just a minute. And she's going to get pregnant two more times, Issachar and Zebulun. And then she's going to have a girl named Dinah. And she's going to be important in the story. And then finally, Rachel's going to have Joseph. Now, she'll have Benjamin later, but she'll die in childbirth, giving birth to Benjamin. That will be the 12 tribes. You kind of see where the 12 come from. Now, as I was putting this together, and I saw this, and I thought you might find this interesting, and we really don't have time to go too far into this, but you know, and again, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and it's supposed to be Reuben. Is that right? Reuben, like that? Reuben's the oldest one, but of course, Jacob's not the oldest one, neither is Isaac. But Reuben is going to go in, as our story goes, he's going to go in and he's Leah's firstborn son. He's going to go in and sleep with Zilpah and he's going to be disqualified. So who is going to be the heir? It appears to be Joseph. And then Joseph is going to have two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. And when Joseph comes to place them in front of Jacob to bless them, he's going to put the oldest son, Manasseh, on this side. So Jacob's right hand goes on Manasseh, and his left hand goes on Ephraim. and Jacob's got him positioned because Jacob is going to be the heir. Well, I'll show you. But then when Jacob reaches out, he does this. And Jacob tries to decide, says, no. He says, I know what I'm doing. And he's going to bless not Jacob's oldest son, Manasseh, but he's going to bless his Ephraim, Jacob's second son. So the Abrahamic covenant goes Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and then Joseph, of course, to all 12 tribes, and to Ephraim. That is how it goes. And if you look right here, I've got these verses written out. 1 Chronicles 5, 1 through 2. I've got it really small. See if I can read it. The sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, for he was the firstborn, but because he defiled his father's couch, his birthright was given to the sons of Joseph. So the birthright of Reuben, the firstborn, goes to the sons of Joseph, the son of Israel, so that he could not be enrolled as the oldest son. Though Judah became strong among his brothers and the chief came from him, yet the birthright belonged to Joseph. So Reuben is set aside. Judah becomes the strong and the kingly tribe, but the birthright goes to Joseph. That's 1 Chronicles. Jeremiah 31:9. With weeping they shall come, and with pleas for mercy I will lead them back. I will make them walk by brooks of water in a straight path in which they shall not stumble. For I am a father to Israel, and Ephraim is my firstborn. So that's now Jeremiah and God speaking, Ephraim is firstborn. And if you read in Genesis 48, verses 13 through 20, that's exactly the story I told you about on his deathbed. That's Jacob crossing his hands, and Joseph tries to stop him. He says, no, I want the firstborn to be with the right hand, and Jacob does that different. So you got three proofs right there kind of making that statement. Okay, let's go back to the, we've got the sons now, one through eight are born, and Leah has stopped having children. Now, we're over here. Yeah, we're on bottom of page 4, chapter 30, verse 14. In the days of wheat harvest, Reuben, that's the oldest, now he's somewhere between 8 and 14 years old. You can figure that out. He went and found mandrakes. Now, a mandrake is that plant right there. See that mandrake? That's that plant that you see on the next page. Now, this makes no sense. You just read this. This makes no sense. He found mandrakes in the field and brought them to his mother, Leah. So as an 8 to 14-year-old boy, he knows, hey, and they're out of season, but he found some mandrakes. And he brings them to Leah because I know what you need these for. Then Rachel said to Leah, please give me some of your son's mandrakes. But she said to her, is it a small matter that you have taken away my husband? Would you take away my son's mandrakes also? So Rachel is asking for the mandrakes because they're going to make her fertile. We'll read about it here. There's something that is used to stimulate sexual activity. So Rachel is like, okay, give me some of these. They're going to make me fertile. I'm going to, put them in Jacob's, coffee or something. And then she's still trying to come up with some plan. And Leah says, no way. I'm not going to give you these. You already took my husband. I've only got one advantage of you. I've got sons. You don't. Would you take away my son's mandrakes also? Rachel says, then he may lie with you tonight in exchange for your son's mandrakes. So somehow Jacob's got four wives and he's sleeping with all of them, but somehow Rachel has, it's her night, she's scheduled, or he lives with her and then he just visits the other, apartments, tents, houses, whatever. Rachel says, then he may lie with you. So she's trading him. She's trading, maybe it's her night and she's trading her night with Jacob, or she's just going to send him over. So again, Leah gives Reuben's mandrakes to Rachel. And when Jacob came in from the field in the evening, Leah went out to meet him, probably dressed appropriately, her hair's all done, and says, you must come in to me, for I have hired you with my son's mandrakes. So she just hired him. You're going to work for me tonight. So he lay with her that night, and God listened to Leah. In this chaos, the text says God listened to Leah. And she conceived and bore Jacob a fifth son. Leah says, God has given me my wages because I gave my servant to my husband. So she called his name Issachar. And Leah conceived again, and she bore Jacob a sixth son. So Leah's going to have six sons. Then Leah says, God has endowed me with a good endowment. Now my husband will honor me because I have borne him six sons. So she called him Zebulun. Afterwards, she bore a daughter and called her name Dinah. Now, here's some information about the mandrake, because I looked it up. Number four, point four, mandrake plant is the mandragora. That's a modern name for it. And believed in the ancient world and classical world to have magical powers, that five shouldn't be there. So both the ancient world here and the classical world going into, you know, Greece and Alexander, Homer, up into New Testament times, it was understood to have magic powers in the ancient world, okay? Now, we're not going to believe that it's got magic powers, but that's what they believe, that there's something to it. It was, at that time, considered to be aphrodisiac. Aphrodisiac, okay? I looked that up so I could pronounce it right, which is a substance that is believed to increase sexual desire or enhance sexual pleasure. So that's what they understood it to be. So that's why Reuben, when he brings these in to his mom, an 8 to 14-year-old boy is bringing these into his mom because in that world they were known to be an aphrodisiac, which is a substance that increases sexual desire and sexual pleasure. Hey, mom, you want some of these? All right. Now, that's what was believed. Song of Solomon, chapter 7, verses 11 through 13. I skipped part of 12, so we didn't have it all written out there. Come, my beloved, the woman writes, let us go out into the fields and lodge in the villages. There I will give you my love. The mandrakes give forth fragrance, and beside our doors are all choice fruits, new as well as old, which I have laid up for you, O my beloved. It was believed to make barren women conceive. Egypt believed it was the aroma that had erotic powers, that if you put this in the room, it gave erotic powers to those that were in the room. Modern science, now this is truth, if you want to say truth, this is what science. It's a sedative, which is a medication or substance that reduces excitability and calms the central nervous system. It's a narcotic, a class of drug that interact with the nervous system to relieve pain and induce pleasure. It also serves as a laxative. It does have an unusual shape resembling human form. Something it represents, again, two things they say it can represent. They thought it represented the male sex organ, but also they thought it represents a female body with their legs. It also, in modern times, you can see this tested if you wanted to, it shines in the dark. All right, so that's the mandrake. Reuben brings them in. That's how Leah buys two more nights with Jacob, has two more children. Chapter 30, verse 22 through 24, then God remembered Rachel. And God listened to her and opened her womb. So she's been praying, apparently. She conceived and bore a son and says, God has taken away my reproach. And she called his name Joseph, saying, may the Lord add to me another son. I want one more. Now, Joseph's name means may it be added. Again, woman's status in marriage wasn't complete until she was born. And in this culture, like I said, a wife could be returned if barren. So Rachel, up until this point, surrounded by 10 sons or 10 boys from the three competing wives, it's great competition. And Jacob's being sold and bought with mandrakes. She has a child, but she herself, before that child was born, she is very vulnerable because Jacob could send her back. And now she's going back to a family without children. She's barren, no children. And for Jacob, if Jacob would have left Laban with Rachel, she would have been very vulnerable. her only hope is to stay with Laban until she's got a child. Otherwise, you know, she's very vulnerable. So now is an appropriate time for Jacob to leave after, you know, Rachel's going to be secure. And his house is established that way with the 11 sons and one daughter, four wives. And that's where we're at. Chapter 30, verse 22 through 24. That's where we're at. So I've got to close this. There's a lot of things going on. You could look at that and examine that. And you could turn that into a biblical parenting class and use it as bad examples, or marriage class as bad examples. But it's all coming together. And you're going to see the fruit of this. It's just going to continue. I mean, the rest of Genesis is just going to, if you allow it, it's just going to continue to just cave in on itself. These are the people of God. It's like, well, that's surprising. Well, no, did you see how the book started in the Garden of Eden with Adam and Eve, and then the Nephilim, and then the flood of Noah, and then the Tower of Babel? It's like, this is why we need a Savior. And God has given them a promise. I am going to come fix this. And that's the thing that they've got, is God promised, like we saw on Sunday, and he says in Galatians, he promised the gospel beforehand when he told Abram, I'll bless all nations through you. How much of the gospel did Abraham and Isaac and Jacob know? All the nations are going to be blessed through us. They didn't know what that meant, but God's going to bless all the nations. And as we see this play out, so God's got to keep this family going. He needs these 12 sons. He's going to use them, but it's like, you got to think he's just, you know, I don't want to speak for God, but it sure isn't, you know, godly people that he's working with right here. I'll pray, and we're free to go. Father, we do thank you for the chance to read your scripture. We ask that we would handle it correctly, that we'd handle it diligently. We'd let the word speak to us and transform our lives, that we may serve you at this time. We thank you for the salvation that we have through Jesus Christ and the Spirit that is abiding within us. We ask that we, again, may live a life that is pleasing to you, but we also would be productive in our spiritual production, leading others to Christ and strengthening people to know who God is and what your will is at this time in history. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Thank you for being here.